Hi, this is Jessie from The Marriage Group. If you're getting married in the Catholic Church, I'd love to tell you about our online pre-Cana and natural family planning courses. These online, on-demand options are used by thousands of couples around the world every year as part of their marriage preparation journey. Find out why ministry leaders recommend our courses and use the code OSV15 for a 15% discount at themarriagegroup.com.
What's the food you hate the most in the world? For me, it's lima beans. Well, it's all the beans, but we'll just focus on the one for today. What does that have to do with the future of the church? Well, we are a faith built on massive change and transformation and total conversion of heart. And yet we seem to be resistant to change in most any form, and not just regular resistance, but vehemently resistant to change. And have you ever tried to change a mass time at a parish? You'd sooner have me eating lima beans for dinner. We tend to categorize change as something we either love or hate, something we engage in a lot in, or we refuse to engage in at all. And for humans who live in a world that is ever-changing and transforming, this mentality can be really problematic because it's really hard to stop hating something and start loving something. I've hated lima beans my entire life, and I don't think I will just magically start loving them one day. So we need to look at change differently, as something that is an inevitable part of the human experience. Because if we don't change, then we don't grow or live. We do more than simply exist. Change is inevitable. A few years ago, I was introduced to the idea that we have different styles of change, and this changed everything for me. Pun intended. And I'm going to tell you about those styles in a second, but just a little bit about me. I've always been in the, I hate change category of people. I love routines and schedules and plans and to-do lists and predictability and stability and every other synonym of those words. I'm a girl who loves tradition in its many forms, and I think that's one of the reasons why I've loved the church since I was a little girl. Mass is predictable. Walk into a church anywhere in the world, look for the little light of the tabernacle, and say hello to the Lord. Go to Mass in any language, and you know when to sit, stand, and kneel. Jesus shows up in the Eucharist every single time. And this really hit home for me when I went to St. Peter's in Rome for the first time, and the seminarian I was with said, "So, what'd you think?" And I said, "It feels like I just came home." So change isn't easy for me. But it became easier when I understood that I was created with a style and I had certain preferences and needs. And when I understood those, I could get on board with a lot of change really quickly. So the tool I use now to help churches and pastors and priests and parishioners understand their own style of change is called the Change Style Indicator from Discovery Learning International. The assessment and accompanying workshop help people understand their own preferences, how they work, how it works with other people that they're around, and how to walk through change pretty quickly and navigate through it better. So let's review the three styles. The first is conservers. Conservers appreciate the structure of how things work. They look to tradition, they look to the past to see what has worked and what might work in the future. They like to make small tweaks to the current structure to begin to embrace something new. This is what I am, very strongly. On the other hand, we have originators. They like to blow up the current structure, do something completely new, wide, expansive change. They're not married to tradition at all. And great innovators fall into this style. Now, you might see how conservers and originators might clash at work or in ministry or relationships. And so we have our third style, our pragmatists. They value harmony, and they make sure that conservers and originators don't do physical harm to one another. But they also value situational, functional change to have a better present. And they help implement change really well. Now, the research says that the general population is 25% conserver, 50% pragmatist, and 25% originator. But I had a theory that the church was a little heavier on the conserver side and a little lighter on the originator side. And when I used the Change Style Indicator assessment and workshop with 200 diocesan priests and lay leaders, they showed up as 50% conserver, 40% pragmatist, and 10% originator. And because of the amount of times I've heard the phrase, "That's just not how we do it here," I would venture to say that many parishes and dioceses show up in a similar way, heavier on the conservator side and lighter on the originator side. When I do work with parishes, I start with a survey to assess where they are, what they think that is working in the parish and what's not working in the parish. And a lot of the things that show up as not working are changes that were made in the recent or not so recent past. Those things range from the mass times are different now and I don't like it, to the place you get the donuts from is different now and you don't have my favorite flavor anymore. A previous parish I worked at, we made a wide, expansive change to the way we did liturgical music, had a lot of people leaving the parish. But we also had a lot of letters of complaint because we changed the way that one side of the church lined up for communion, a small logistical change. A new parish collaborative I worked with had to accommodate the physical limitations of two priests serving three parishes. The parishioners could not understand why there could only be two 4 p.m. vigil masses on Saturday afternoon. Now, I'm sure you're laughing and rolling your eyes, but honestly, these complaints are just the tip of the iceberg. We seem to be allergic to change, and so we avoid it. We resist change, and we refuse to do it. Priests resist because of the feedback that's in a negative nature, or they make changes under the cover of darkness and hope that no one notices. Guess what? They always notice, and they never forget. But those logistical changes that we're avoiding, they're just the first step toward innovation. Let me say that again. Logistical changes are just the first step toward innovation. They give us room to do something new, something different, to bring someone new to the faith, because we need to do that. We can't just keep on keeping on and do nothing different. We can't decide that we hate change, like me and my lima beans, and just never do it. Because we have big concerns we need to address in the church. Almost every parish I work with will agree on these big things. The first one is, there are no young people here. Where are young families, our youth, our young adults? Where is the next generation? Two, people are not frequenting the sacraments. They don't attend Mass. They don't believe in the real presence. They're not having their children baptized. They're not getting married in the church. They're not bringing them back for confirmation. All we ever have are funerals. And number three, it's just not like it used to be anymore. And it's not that parishes aren't doing something to address these big concerns. It's that more often than not, they act with a strong conserver mentality, making small tweaks to the current structure to solve big concerns. But small tweaks are not the solution. They're just the first step. They give us room to take a step back, to dig deeper, and to get to the why behind the problem so we can address it. So let's talk through a phrase that I've heard commonly, and I've even said myself. Why are there only ever white-haired people at daily Mass? Most churches will ask the question, now what can we do to get more young people to attend the 9 a.m. Mass on Tuesday? That's the wrong question. We should be asking, what time can we have daily Mass so that people who are not retired can attend? When I talk to priests about adding more times for confession, he'll say, why should I add more times? No one comes now. I say, what if the time is the problem? Maybe the issue is that you have it from 3 to 3:30 on Saturday afternoon, not that you don't have any sinners in your parish. So what if we do something to address these issues? What if we no longer have Saturday afternoon confessions? What if instead we have them on Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m., we have the Blessed Sacrament exposed, and we provide childcare? Then we preach for weeks and weeks about the benefits of making a holy hour, sitting in front of our Lord in the Eucharist, how to make a good confession, and why we should go regularly. Now, I have some of you maybe pausing this video or turning to your neighbor and say, did she just suggest we stop offering Saturday confessions? And I sort of did, but I said more, so let me repeat it again. What if instead of Saturday afternoon confessions, we have them on Thursday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m., we have the Blessed Sacrament exposed, and we provide childcare. You'll notice I made a pretty radical suggestion, and some of you are thinking, that wouldn't work in our parish. But I know if you follow some simple steps to implement that or any other small or radical change, you'll have smashing success. So step one is be aware of the different styles and how they show up in you, your priests, your ministers, your lay leaders, your parishioners, because this gives us an appreciation for each style. It helps us include each style when we're making the suggestions. So how might each style react to the confession suggestion? Remember how some of you couldn't hear my entire suggestion because it blew up the structure that's been alive in our church since even before my grandparents were born? This indicates to me that you are a strong conserver. This strong conserver sees you. Conservers appreciate the structure of how things work now, and they want to make small tweaks to embrace a new future. So they might expand confessions from 3 to 4 p.m., doubling the amount of time offered, and then just see what happens. Some of you might be thinking, well, we already have an Advent penance service and a Lenten penance service. What if we just add two more and we'll have one every quarter and then we'll begin to embrace something new while keeping our current structure? It's a great pragmatist move. But the originator idea I had blows up everything about the current structure except for the very fact that we're going to confession. So remember that everyone will hear you differently, and so you need to communicate well, which leads to our second step. Communicate the change 3 to 5 to 7 times at least. This ensures that everyone hears your entire suggestion. Some people will think you have gone too far, but others will think you haven't gone far enough. So be sure to communicate slowly, well, and often. Step 3, develop ways for people to share their feedback with you. These might be listening sessions or surveys, town halls, one-on-one meetings, or any such thing that invites people to share their thoughts, feedback, feelings, concerns. Listen to those concerns, even if you think they're not a big deal. They matter to them. You have some people sharing that they'll have to change their own habits now. Listen to that feedback and share the positive feedback that you've gotten from families about this new opportunity. These listening sessions are an opportunity for people to hear you about the change, for you to listen to them, but most importantly, for them to listen to each other as they come together as a community to embrace a change. Step 4, implement the change with the adjustments that you've made based on the feedback that you've gotten. So maybe this means you have first Saturday afternoon confessions and then Thursday evenings the rest of the month. Then listen for thoughts, feedback, and feelings again. Adjust again if necessary. Take on the idea of an experimenter who is going to try something new to figure out what's going to work for your community. And don't stop telling people the why behind the change and the impact that it's having. Step 5, celebrate the wins and grieve the losses. Don't stop sharing the difference that this is making in our communities, because we need to embrace change. We can't just keep on doing the same thing. We need to do something new, something different, something innovative that attracts someone new to the faith. This is what we're called to do. I know that we can do this. How? You don't get to be 2,000 years old without embracing a little change over the course of time. Remember my hatred of Lima Bean's identity? Don't let a hatred of change be your identity or your parish's identity. Begin embracing something new, small logistical changes that make you comfortable. Even I might put lima beans in next time I make hummus.